with everything that's happened recently, if I turned around to you and said, what is there to be happy about, may well be one of those questions you'd at least stop for a moment and reflect on it. I'm referring to the International Day of Happiness, all the more poignant given the recent events in Christchurch. Many, of course, will be asking, how can we be happy with all that's happening around us? There are people who often talk about that. How can we be happy in this world? You might think there's absolutely nothing to be happy about. If you thought that, do you know that you'd be wrong? Happiness is a feeling, an emotion. It comes from within our primitive brain. It's probably something that has allowed us to survive over the years, actually. We don't always allow our primitive brain to do its work properly. We're designed to look for the negative in life. That's actually the survival instinct. You know, the old line, well, better look around the corner because a saber-toothed tiger might be there and it might be hungry. And somebody will say, oh, don't be so negative. There's nothing around the corner. But when negative things appear, we have proof that everything is bad or gloomy, and it reinforces our belief in not being happy. Of course, being happy all the time is not natural or normal either. Somebody might look at that and go, there's just something a little bit peculiar about that. But what we can do is look for opportunities to reinforce happiness and make it more prominent in our lives. Sometimes there's a bit of the old, you know, glass half full versus glass half empty scenario. We can, believe it or not, choose to be happy more often. We just need to understand how to do that. By the way, the International Day of Happiness is tomorrow, FYI. I love my acronyms nowadays. I'm starting to get into those in a big way. Malcolm Dawes is an authority on people, performance and effectiveness and is talking to us right now. Hi, Malcolm.
Hi, Chris.
I like the way you put this. Of course you can be happy. It sounds like a really basic message and I like it. But I find it really interesting that you go back to the talk of the primitive brain and say, well, you know something, we're actually programmed to look for the negative, and I can see the logic in that because it's how we survive.
Yeah, that's correct. We are, as human beings, hardwired to look for the negative, whether that's in our daily lives, in our communities, or at work, or in our school or universities. Yeah, we're hardwired to look for the negative. And as you said in your introduction, it really is a security mechanism, if you like. But the danger with that, of course, is that we can, again, as you said, go around with that glass half empty effect. And especially given the recent events, not only in Christchurch, but in other parts of the world, which seem to dog the daily lives of most people. And it depends on how we react to those as to whether or not we allow that negativity and that protective system to get the better of us all the time.
Do we sometimes feel that we have to be negative? For example, if somebody felt, and I'll put this in a very basic term, thank God it wasn't me, I wasn't in Christchurch at that time and I didn't face that particular horror. You could almost feel guilty for thinking that, but I sometimes think that to think that is also natural because at some point you say to yourself, well, I literally in this case dodged a bullet. There'd be people who'd be saying, oh, it's not right to think that. I wonder deep down how many people would logically think that.
I think it's logical to think that, absolutely. That's that protective bit of our brain coming into play. I know probably like many of your listeners may have friends or colleagues or people that they know or could have been in Christchurch or elsewhere in New Zealand for that matter. And on Friday afternoon, I sent a number of messages to clients of mine and friends and people I know over there. And as I typed it and sent messages, I thought, this almost sounds wrong in saying, I hope you're okay, because at that stage we didn't know quite as many people had been shot. But even then, is it okay to say to somebody, I hope you're okay? And it almost implies it doesn't matter about everybody else, which of course it does. So I think we always go around thinking the negative. And even in that context, it's great when people say, we were safe, thank you for your message. I had one client, for example, whose staff were in lockdown until about 6 p.m. that afternoon. And this is where the happiness bit kicks in, I guess, when you get the message back to say, thank you for your thoughts and we are all safe, thank goodness, and we're quite relieved. And whilst those people still go through the shock and the horror and will be suffering the effects of that for a long time to come, there's even that sort of glimmer of happiness or hope there. And even the way that people in Christchurch have reacted, there are stories of heroism and it does almost make you smile a bit. That's the whole thing of looking for that positive, even in the most grave of situations.
But is that also not needed to help us survive? For example, if in the gravest of situations we threw our hands in the air and said, this is hopeless, by its very nature, that would work against our survival. On the other hand, if we stand up and if people are, for want of a better term, quite heroic in what they do and they try and help others and they help people survive, that by its very nature, collectively helps us as a society to survive, doesn't it?
Again, I think I'll use the example of the fires recently in Australia, perhaps, as another example of a disaster, perhaps not one of the same making as in Christchurch. And you see people there, and I watched an interview recently with a guy who was involved in the fires in northern New South Wales recently, which are still burning, incidentally. This guy stood there and said, "This is all I've got left. I've got nothing. My whole business is gone. All I've got is what I'm wearing." But his attitude was one of that glass half full, that optimism. I'm not saying he was happy, given that he'd lost his livelihood and everything around him, but it was that belief that he had, and it goes back to our belief. He doesn't know how he's going to get his business back. He doesn't know how he's going to get his winery back or a clean set of clothes over the next few days, but he had that belief that it was going to work and that it would happen. Henry Ford once said, "Whether you believe you can or believe you can't, either way, you're right." And in the same set of circumstances, there will be other people who have lost everything tragically in fires, for example. And as you say, throw their arms in the air and say, "Woe is me, what's going to happen?" And those people sometimes wish that they, it's a horrible thing to say, but they sometimes wish they'd gone up in the flames as well, because they don't see a way out. And that's this bit of our brain which we can override. We can make ourselves see the positive, and that leads to happiness, perhaps. Maybe I could give you another example, which is not quite so extreme, but a good friend of mine who lives on the Gold Coast was burgled not once, but twice. And the second time the house was broken into, she was away on holiday with her partner. Thieves got the keys to the car, stole the car. Long story short, police got the car, got the property back and so on. And somebody commented to her, I think it was on Facebook, and said, "How can you be so happy about this?" Because her response was, "Hey, they've got him and everything's good." And the response was, "Well, I'm not always happy necessarily, but my misery and my unhappiness is much more short-lived because I recognize I can't control what's happened, but I can control the way I feel about it." You said in your introduction there, happiness, like sadness, like confusion, like anything else, is an emotion which derives from the primitive part of our brain. And we can therefore say to ourselves, "This is a terrible situation. However, what can I do to make the best of this bad situation?"
That's what it's about sometimes, isn't it? Just making the best of whatever situation you have. Something I wanted to ask you about, if you don't mind though, Malcolm.
Of course.
We often have what is reality and we have perception. And despite what many people think, perception may be reality, but reality is quite often not perception.
That's an interesting comment. I was listening to somebody actually at lunchtime today, funnily enough, a psychologist who's studied at Harvard and has done research into the subconscious and unconscious brain. It's a fascinating talk. And she was referring to that about perception and reality and which is which. And she gave a fascinating insight. I don't know if you or any of your listeners have heard of a book, and I think there was a film made as well, called The Secret.
Oh, yes, I've heard of that.
The Secret is one of those commercialized books and films about positive belief and therefore happiness and wishing what you can get would actually come true. And so the lady I listened to today at lunchtime did some research with a professor at Harvard University in the psychology unit over there in the US, and they thought they would put The Secret to test. Very briefly, what they did was to divide people into two groups. One group, they said, go to the gym and exercise for 30 days. The other group, they said, we want you to perceive that you're going to the gym for 30 days. Go through the process. You don't have to go to the gym. You don't have to leave the house. Just imagine that you're in the car driving to the gym. Imagine that you're going through the traffic. Imagine you get to the gym, you pay your membership, you go to your locker, you go, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do your workout, have a shower, go home. So after 30 days, they then said to the group of people who were following The Secret, if you like, in other words, imagining and using their perception, they said to those people, okay, now we actually want you to go to the gym. So they went to the gym. 121 days into this experiment, the group of people who only went to the gym and didn't imagine it, only 10% of those after 121 days continued to go to the gym. The group that had spent 30 days imagining it and therefore looking at it from a perception point of view, 92% of those continued to work at the gym. In other words, we can teach our brain to imagine something, to believe in something, to look at perception and make it a reality. It's an interesting concept and a very complex one, but that's all to do with the science of neuroplasticity and the ability for us to change the way we think and to create new pathways within our brain, which can lead to being more happy if we choose to do so.
One thing I have to ask you before we finish.
Yeah.
It is possible, isn't it, to have what you might consider an unreal or a false level of happiness. Somebody who's just happy under ridiculous circumstances.
Yeah, and I'm no psychiatrist. It's not normal and not natural for us to be happy all the time. And there's also a group of people with certain conditions who will appear to be happy under any circumstance. And that, again, is not natural. So I think, is that where you're coming from in terms of,
Yes, And you just know that given the circumstances, the way they're reacting is just not normal.
Correct. And I think when you start looking at those circumstances, you're probably getting outside what you might call the realms of normality when there's almost euphoria. I think in certain circumstances, you know, we've got chemicals in our brain which make us feel high, for want of a better term, without taking anything to make us feel high. But it isn't a normal state to be in that state of happiness all the time. Although it's interesting, I've seen a couple of documentaries on the TV, as you may have done, where there are people who try and get to that state on purpose. But I don't believe it's a natural state. And it's good for us to be unhappy sometimes. We have to have a balance of our emotions.
That's right. It's also a yardstick by which we measure our happiness.
Correct, yes.
If you're always happy, you have no yardstick to measure it. Hey, listen, Malcolm, absolutely. We're out of time, but thank you very much for yours.
Thank you very much indeed, Chris. It's good to speak to you again.
And don't forget, tomorrow is the International Day of Happiness, being Wednesday the 20th of March. That's Malcolm Dawes, who's an authority on people performance and effectiveness.